Well, thank you all so much. It's been wonderful to see the response that we're giving to Dennis already by bringing quantities of diapers and other clothing materials. And they're all stacked back in the corner of the break room. And you might notice that as you go by. That's a wonderful thing. The book exchange is still going strong. And there's another table over here where you can write your inspirations and ideas about us for our, I think our 40th anniversary is Word and Life is coming up soon. And thanks very much to the Black Group for a nice catering job. Next week it'll be the White Group that will do it. And I think that's all I have now for announcements. If you wish to ask a question, please come up to this mic and get close to it. And we'll all hear. Thank you.
Well, I too want to thank the folks that brought things for our little community in Guadalupe. The diapers, the Pampers are like gold where we are because they're very expensive, you know, and moms that don't have them are really grateful to get them. So thank you so much for that.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
I'm speaking on behalf of my friend Karen. She asked me to ask this question, and I thought it was a good one because I've wondered the same thing. How come our farmers do not demand a worker program where they get documents and allow them to come and work and do the jobs that obviously Americans don't want? It seems rather obvious. The farmers, whether it's agriculture or dairy farms, they need the undocumented, and they should speak up for them. So I don't know if you could tell us why that's not happening.
Well, I don't know if I can tell you why. I have some thoughts. We were talking about this just at the break with Jim and, was it Bob? I forget. Anyway, so here's the deal. The system, the way it's set up now, we both invite and reward with an income people to come up from Mexico and work for us. We want them to come and do that, and we pay them to come and do that. And so folks that are living in poverty and having a hard time taking care of their families are being invited to come here and work here and pay them. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't we if it was the other way around? The question is the legality. You know, so you have like two camps. You have one camp that says, you know, we're a nation of laws. We need to not let, just turn a blind eye to people who are doing something illegal. There's one camp that's like that. And we have another camp that says, well, then let's make it legal. You know, if we need them, we want them, actually we value them, you know, they're doing an important work here, then why are we making them be illegal? Why not make them legal? So that's the two camps. And, so, and it is a kind of a, is the glass half full or half empty kind of thing. It's a perspective, you know. The reason it is the way it is, the reason it is the way it is because of us. I don't mean us just in this room, but us as collectively, in the United States. So we all have Congress people representing us. And if I have a congressperson and I say to that congressperson, you make these illegals legal and you're out of a job. And if all your constituency is saying that, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. But if they won't do that, and you have an agricultural lobby saying you get rid of my workers, you're getting no funding for your campaign. Now what do? You know, you're in a bind. You're on both sides. So everybody agrees. Let's just be quiet about this. Let's pretend. Let's invite people up. Let's pay them. Let's do all that. But let's keep them illegal, and let's not make them legal because I'm going to lose my constituents. But let's keep them because I'm going to lose my funding from ag industry or whatever industry is employing. So that's where we're at, and that's why it's like that. And you know, who really ends up getting slammed for the whole system? The immigrants, because on the one hand, they're persona non grata. People have to live with a lot of people looking down on them, saying, "Go back where you came from. You're here illegally." They live with that day in and day out. Number one. Number two, there's tons of abuses going on because they don't feel like they have a way to address those abuses because they're illegal and they're going to get in trouble if they say, "Don't rape me in the field. Don't make me work 12 hours and pay me for 8. Don't," you know, they can't say that. So there's a lot of abuses. And unfortunately, there are people in our system, public people, who promote the myth that people who come here without documents to work are rapists, drug dealers. Are there some rapists and drug dealers? Of course. But a lot less than their own population, you know. What that does then is the people that buy into all that then are pressuring their Congress people, don't make any path to citizenship. Don't even make a path to coming here legally on a work. There is a legal way for growers to bring people over. It's called the H-2A program. We saw where we live a kind of a move towards that. It was short-lived because the H-2A program requires a grower or an employer to go down to Mexico and hire people in Mexico. Not hire somebody here. They have to go down to Mexico and hire them there. So they have to set up shop down there. And when they hire them, they have to, because we had the Bracero program that had so many abuses in the past, they have to make sure they're housed. They have to provide for their housing, for their food. They have to pay them above a minimum wage. There's all these restrictions. It's like if you're trying to compete with somebody who's got undocumented people working and you got H-2A people work, you'll never make it. So that system's set up, too, to fail. So it's really hard, you know, and so someone was asking me at the break, "Well, what would you do?" I'd say, "Well, I'd take all the undocumented people that people consider illegal and make them legal." And there's much simpler ways to. I'm not saying make them all citizens. A lot of folks wouldn't really care to become citizens. What they want is to be able to work and support their families. I can't tell you how many people have come to our house weeping. Their mother's dying, but she's in Mexico. They can't go see their mother one last time before she dies. You know, their kids sick. There's many people whose kids are in Mexico and they're sending the money home. They're only here working to send the money home. They can't go back. It's a lose-lose-lose and one little win situation for all the folks that are here undocumented. Yes, they make a living. That's the one win. Everything else is lose. People hate them. People discriminate against them. People abuse them. It's what Dorothy Day, the founder of the Catholic Order, would call a filthy, rotten system. It's a filthy, rotten system, and we can't fix it, not because of our Congress. It's because of us. Because if everybody got together and said, "Wait a minute, we don't want these people to go home. We want them here. We value what they're doing for us. We want them here. Could you do something to make it legal for them to be here so that we don't have all this?" You know, it just breeds racism and bias. And anyway, that's my big spiel. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Harriet.
How are you?
I didn't get to say hi.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Two things. One, about the safety pin. I was, when we were at the Muslim support rally down at De La Guerra Plaza, people had things on their back that said, I've got your back. And so my family and I were talking about it, and I thought, well, you know, I'll remove myself from this group. Because. And my daughter said, no, no. Can you imagine a little old lady walking up to somebody that's being harassed and saying, oh, Amy, let's walk this way. So she thinks I'm a perfect example of somebody that could get in the middle. I don't know. So it's something for all of us to think about on that. I wondered, Dennis, if you would say something about, you said something about the Chomos, and I don't know how you said it. Don't believe all that. So could you talk a little bit about that part of what they're going through in prison?
Yeah. So Chomo is a category in prison. It stands for child molester, and it's a very broad category. So in that category is anybody that is in prison for a crime with someone under 18 years old. They don't have to have abused a child. They could have been looking at child pornography on their computer and be in prison. They could have been. I'm not justifying the people or why they're there, you know. But there is a difference. I probably shouldn't even go there. All I'm saying is that in prison, that designation CHOMO is the scarlet letter of prison. When you get that, and when I went, it was, I'm sure, within 90 seconds of walking onto my unit that I was taken aside by three of the white guys and grilled about why I was in prison, because they want to get that designation down immediately. Are you or are you not a CHOMO? And I had to explain why I was there in detail, why I was there, so that, enough to convince them that I wasn't there for child molestation. And then once you're designated that, basically you're told you stay at your cell. You don't come in the common area. You can come up here to eat at your table with your people, but then you go back. And there's violence against CHOMOs and so on. So first of all, I don't want to give the impression that I have any tolerance for someone who abuses a child. I don't. And I also want to say, I say that as someone who has personal experience with that. And I don't want to go into that. But what I want to say is that no one deserves to be cast out like that. No one. It's like saying, you're irredeemable. You're irredeemable. And I don't think anybody is irredeemable. And it's not my place. That's God's place. But I just think that it's part of that really, really hard prison culture and system.
Leprosy was something like that in Jesus' day.
Yeah.
Leper.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, like... I don't think someone who, I think there should be consequences, and the believe me, the system has it set up so there's consequences for people who are child molesters. But it's that added on consequence to be separated from the world, to be in prison. Is a very harsh thing. It's hard to explain unless you've been there. To be in prison, just to be taken out of society and be in prison and separated from the world, is very, very hard. And so anybody who's there is experiencing that. In my mind, that's enough. I don't need a prison guard to dehumanize me on top of it. And I don't need another inmate to beat me down on top of it. That's enough. to be incarcerated is enough. Did I even get to your question? I just think that the issue is that. Okay, I'm just going to give one example, and you may have a judgment about it, and I'm happy to talk to you about this. But I was in a cell right next to a chomo that I didn't know was a chomo, because I never took the time to look and see who was eating at that table. And I actually went to the chomo Bible study, and I didn't even know I was going to the chomo Bible study, but until I was called out for it. But this guy, you know, somebody came and just went after me, not physically, but as close to physically as possible, because I was talking to this guy. And so then I said, well, you know, I'm not. If he wants to talk to me, I'm not going to not talk to him. But then the guy thought like I stood up for him, so he felt important to tell me why he was there. He was working for some government agency that taught English language in foreign countries, and he was teaching in Cambodia. And in the village where he was teaching, this young woman fell in love with him, and he with her. It turns out she was 17. Now, should he have known that? Probably. Should he have not had any relationship with this young woman? Probably. And he got 10 years. He got 10 years for that. And I don't want to get too much descriptive, but in the whole prosecution of the case, he never had a physical sexual relation with the woman, with the young woman. It's not like he had sex with her, but he was in this relationship, and they, anyway. So now, not only does he get 10 years in prison, he served 3 in Cambodia and the other 7 here in the United States. He was getting close to the end of his sentence, but he's dealt with that label, chomo, for the whole time he was there. And because nobody believes anybody in prison, you know, nobody would believe that. And so, you know, he stuck with being oppressed by the only population that he can live in because of that. Is that right? I don't think so. I don't think that's right. And I'm leaving aside the whole, I'm not even judging one way or the other about the relationship. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't there. I don't know. You know, but the system is set up for anybody that's had anything. I'll stop there. Hi, Mary.
Thank you for coming. I'm going to come back to the question: what are we going to do about this? And also to your observation about the energy from the Women's March and how you experienced that. And I think a lot of people in the room probably were at some Women's March somewhere. And so there are a number of actions that have come from that. And I just want to talk about Indivisible, which is one of those groups. And I hear people say, so I know they've heard about it. But just to get it on the tape, for one thing, I love the name, mm-hmm. Indivisible. Just the last story you told. We're all in this pea soup together, right? And the principles of Indivisible are that it is about promoting our values, and it's to be nonviolent. Actions are to be nonviolent. And we're to do local actions, doable things. So it's not directed against, it's directed for. And locally, 2 weeks ago anyway, at an Indivisible meeting in Santa Barbara, they said that they had started just after the Women's March with 12 people, and they had 1,800 people who had joined. And that's happening around. And some of the actions also are very targeted. So the town halls that took place around the country there were many indivisible people there, and it was to be, they were to be nonviolent, they were to be very, very firm, and very much about promoting values to their own Congress people. And it's also about when, like, we have, we're fortunate in California to have people that are for our values in many cases. And it's to have their back, to let them know that they're not alone and that we are acting together. So I just wanted to get that.
Yeah, good.
And just thank you for your witness and yeah. your example in Tenzies.
Yeah, I have to say, Mary, I'm learning from you too about indivisible, and it's probably sounds kind of sappy, but you know, it's indivisible as opposed to invisible. You know, the thing is that you know, that is so important. It's one of the good things that's come out of this whole kind of crisis is people have gotten out of their houses and they're out doing stuff and they're connecting. You know, they're connecting. If this could have been done 4 years ago or 8 years ago, during the time we had time to do that, we wouldn't have the president we have now, I don't think. But rapid response is really important. I was blown away. I went to San Luis Obispo for the Women's March. There were 10,000 people there, and I couldn't believe it. Who got 10,000 people out? And how did they do this? It happened, you know. And then in Santa Maria, which is a very conservative place, now I'm seeing, you know, people coming out to support the Muslim population. I've seen people coming out to support immigrants. I'm seeing people coming out. And there's these rapid response teams. So if you're not connected with some group that has access to you that can tell you, okay, this is what we're going to do, and this is where we're going to do it and when we're going to do it, you're missing the boat. You got to be on somebody's list so that you know about those things. And those are huge. Can I just say one other thing? I don't want to take up too much time, but the other thing is efficacy. We really have to be careful. Once we set out, we have to be careful not to put all our eggs in that basket, you know, not to go, oh man, if this works, it's going to be great, but if it doesn't, okay, let's forget it. You can't do that. We've been standing out at Vandenberg for years and years and years, and they're still testing ICBMs. If not reaching the goal was our reason for being there, we wouldn't be there. You know, we do it not to change the world, but so the world doesn't change us. That's kind of the mantra, you know. So I want to add that too, you know, that it's important to be part of, you know, indivisible, and it's also important to be a part of it solely for your own integrity and your own values and the public promotion of those values. Thanks, Mary.
One of the things that I've just become acquainted with is Sojourners' Matthew 25 pledge. And they ask us to look at Matthew 25 to make that our felt thing. And in three areas that we're working on is immigrants, the black situation with the police, and Muslims. And I would encourage everybody to go to sojo.net and read the pledge and see if you can do that and pass it on.
Lovely. Lovely.
Great idea.
Yeah, those are three areas that are really right now conspiring to divide us all, you know. So to be indivisible in that, God bless you, is important.
I would just like to suggest that we develop a list of some of these organizations where we can become involved and the websites and that kind of thing. So if we put out a piece of paper here over on that table, if people have this information, please write it there, and then we'll try to get something together to distribute in the next couple weeks. Thank you.
I think that's a great idea, Martha. You know, when I showed up at this women's march in San Luis Obispo, they had booths set up. Like they had the forethought to say, okay, if you're a group, an organization, an activist group, and we're going to have people here, put your stuff out. And they let people know, go to the booths. You know, pick the one that resonates with you most, but pick one. That's a good idea.
Back to the question of nonviolence, okay? There is a tradition in certain religious, organized religions, you know, to tell their people, no, you may not go to war, for example. You must be a pacifist if you're part of this religion. And we have examples of that. But it strikes me that a lot of people who are not necessarily religious get it. You know, and so I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on, and I'm speaking as a Catholic who actually was a successful conscientious objector, and there aren't many of us around because there's a triumphal tradition in Catholicism, which is it's a God, country, and Notre Dame or whatever it is. It's a triumphalist attitude, and we're not going to be beaten. And there's an awful lot of kind of history of that plays out in Vietnam and Cambodia when they passed over from being in French colonies to in the hands of us, basically. And we had Catholic, well-meaning doctors trying to get everybody to back them up as they set up outposts in Cambodia and so on. And atheistic communism was on the move, and so you had to oppose that, and you had to do it with guns. And I'm just wondering, is religion relevant anymore, or is it just lost its luster? I don't know.
It depends on your community. You know, there are communities that when you were talking, I'm thinking, let me find this thing in the book. It's somewhere at the beginning of the chapter that we're discussing today, John Philip Newell alludes to, and I can't put it the way you put it, but rebirthing God is finding that deepest place of God that's inside ourselves. Okay, that's inside us, whether we're with a community, not with a community, in a religion, not in a religion. If you believe that resonates with me, I do feel like that there is a deep place and connection with God inside myself. And he's talking about that rebirthing coming from that place, not necessarily from your religion or your people around you, but what we really know, what we know to be true. And I maintain, maybe just because I'm an eternal optimist, that the people who can't access that can't access that because of fear. And I think that's why in the gospel, Jesus is saying over and over again, do not be afraid, do not be afraid, do not be afraid. Fear is like a huge block that won't let us access that. Number one, the fear of death. That's the number one fear, is the fear of death. And most of our fears are connected with that, you know. And so anyway, I'm agreeing with you, Tom. I think that You don't have to find that in a religion. You find that deep inside yourself. You know it to be true somehow, and then you find a community that also knows that and has those values, and then you throw in with that community because that's all we have is God and each other, and we need each other to help us with that. So I'm with you.
Good morning, and thank you so much for being here. I wanted to mention the United Farm Workers, which is a wonderful organization. It started really with Cesar Chavez many years ago, and, you know, what he accomplished by, you know, boycotts and everything. And we had friends that came from France and joined that and wrote a book about Cesar Chavez. And it really, I mean, the information they have about what's going on, they do a lot of good work.
Yes.
So it's a good organization to give to or get involved in, because they're working, you know, with their housing and what's happening to them. And it's you know, really true. So I just would recommend that.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. Thank you for coming. I just wanted to share that there are two actions coming up that you would be interested in, as well as I think the people here. One of them is a workshop on training for how to construct sanctuary spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman from LA who's experienced in this, quite nationally known, and I don't remember her name, but she's coming up to be part of the training, and that will be on March 22nd, and it will be at the library at 11:30 to 2:30, I believe. And we'll have a flyer here next week. And the other one is March 15th. There's going to be a League of Women Voters forum on how to get people with mental illness out of jail. And the sheriff's representative, district attorney, public defender's office, advocacy groups like Families Act and NAMI and CLU are all going to be, you know, presented in a forum. And then people can see the two big things happening in Santa Barbara County this year. If the optimistic vision of it occurs, we will have a Stepping Up initiative, which has been approved by the county, which will deal with getting the people in jail with mental illness out. And then the other part of it is a couple $1 million coming down from the state for housing for mental illness and homelessness. And so with those two, there'll be spaces and facilities built to have spaces for those people coming out of jail. And that's always been the challenge.
Yeah.
So I think this is an exciting year. And if we have a lot of advocacy there, we can accomplish something significant. Okay.
Thank you.
I just have another question. Yeah, you're talking about people are free and safe to come to your house. So are you considered a sanctuary, or do you, I don't know what that involves anymore.
We've sort of, we always kind of had a self-image of being a sanctuary.
Yeah.
We didn't do anything official. We're very careful at our house as well, because we're pretty well known in the community. And we have guests who stay at our house, and we don't want to put them in jeopardy, you know, when they're actually living in our house. So we do the same thing. Someone knocks on our door, we don't open it unless we know who it is.
Okay.
You know, same thing we tell other people. And, yeah, we're all learning as we go along. But, yeah, our house is, I guess you could call it a sanctuary.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation today. And I especially appreciate your bringing up Be Not Afraid.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing. We actually, right after the inauguration, I think we were using that as a touchstone for ourselves here.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing to do. Although I do think fear of public speaking is the number one fear. So, and I just wanted to the
Dale Carnegie
to the point of activism. I just wanted to share this with people because I found it really great. Probably most of you know Michael Moore, the documentary filmmaker. He does a lot of posts on Facebook, but he did a post on February 23rd, which gave like 10 things you can do. So for those looking for, well, what can I do? He gives 10 pretty practical suggestions on how to get involved and how to get engaged.
Yeah. I saw that. It's very good. Thank you, Michael.
Got any concluding thoughts?
No, I don't have a concluding thought. I would like to say this is... Pardon? I wished. I really do wish she would have been. It would have been really nice to have her here. Thank you. I just want to say that Michael was saying the fear of public speaking. Tenzi and I aren't like public speakers, and to be honest with you, there's some trepidation when Tom says, "Could you come and say?" There's a feeling of trepidation, but it's totally all calmed, just knowing I'm going to be in this group. I love this group, and I feel nourished by this group. I feel affirmed by this group. It gives me hope. It gives me juice. It gives me gratitude. So I just want to be sure and say that I have so much respect for what you do, for your reading the book, for your getting together to have presenters. You have a really good presenter next week, if I remember right. But well, they all are. Oh. So anyway, I just really I really respect that a lot, that you take the time out, as Maureen was talking about some other things you can do, you know. And I know that sometimes when people talk about what we can do, we're just going, oh, when am I going to find the time for that, you know. But you all find the time for this, and this is really important, really good. And so I'm grateful to be here. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to say also that there's more than one way to give to Beatitudes House. If you are inclined to slip something to Dennis, it was perfectly okay, or write a check or something like that. But there's a lot of tangible stuff back there which we are offering along with our honorarium for his having been a speaker here. And it all comes from you. So yes. Bless your hearts. And may you all have a good week. Thanks.